CliffCentral.com.
Yes, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. I'm here with Leanne Moll, and the rest of the crew are in the Johannesburg studio so we can make sure we bring you the show live this morning. Of course, if you're listening on a podcast, it could be any time. We don't know. You could be listening at 3 a.m. You could be
you could be doing a poo.
You could be on the International Space Station for all we know. So interesting. Funnily enough, just speaking of that, I saw that we actually have a number of people who listen to us from Ukraine, and there are audience members. There are people who are listening right now, and there are people who've downloaded our podcasts in the Ukraine and Russia. We have more people listening in Russia than we do in the Ukraine. So does that mean I have to take Russia's side if I want to keep my audience happy?
Yeah, I don't even want to comment on that.
Well, I wouldn't be the first to comment. There are a couple of interesting points of view. We mentioned this on the Burning Platform the other day, but the Pope and Noam Chomsky and Lula of Brazil, three people who are very much on the left of politics, have all raised their eyebrows and started to question reasons why it seems that there is this monolithic response to the Ukraine-Russia conflict in the United States. And all three of those people are hardly the kind of people who you would expect to say these things. So it's maybe worth just exploring that if you are interested in international relations. That's one of the conversations going on. I wanted to bring this up, Leanne. This is a brilliant thing I thought of. Well, I didn't think of it. This person did. But I've been thinking about it once I saw it pretty much nonstop. Look at this. All right. So I'll read it to you quickly. I think it's either a tweet or an Instagram post or something. And I think this is an incredible way of looking at wedding invitations. We've spoken about weddings a million times on the show. You know, how much effort goes into it, how much expense goes into it, how people sometimes expect you to go along to a destination wedding and spend a huge amount of your own money, what kinds of presents you should give people at a wedding, who you should take as a partner to the wedding if you're single. You know, if you do go to them, is there an expectation of X, Y, and Z? So we've discussed all of that before, but look at this quickly. This guy says, at my wedding, you'll be able to come alone, bring a plus one, or choose a minus one, where you can uninvite one person of your choosing. No questions asked. So you can bring a plus one. We know what that is. That means you can come on your own, or you can bring somebody, according to this person. Now, that person could be a relationship, a romantic partner. It could be somebody who you just want to bring as a friend because they're good fun and they make a wedding more interesting. It could be a relative. It could be pretty much anyone. But I like this idea of a minus one. Can you imagine saying to all your wedding guests, all right, here's the total list, and you can get to do either a plus one, or you can come on your own, or you can do the minus one thing. No questions asked. But then I started thinking about this and I thought, okay, so you give people the wedding list, you give them the guest list, and then let's say I choose to uninvite you, Leanne, and you've already been invited because maybe you and I don't get along or we once dated and I don't want to see you at the wedding. How are they going to tell you that you're now uninvited? That's going to be very awkward.
Yeah, and hoping it's anonymous as well. But yeah, it could be the solution to bringing down the numbers. You know, you think, oh, I've got to invite Pearl and I have to invite John, and I know they hate each other.
Yeah.
I want to avoid all the conflict, and poof, it's gone. No, Pearl and John cancel each other out.
But poof, it isn't gone because someone has to tell them. So when you say no questions asked, how are you going to tell Pearl that John uninvited her, or tell John that Pearl uninvited him, or you just not invite either of them before you even give them the wedding list? You know, I mean, there's disclosure here that's going to make this very complicated. So I like the idea, but I don't know how practically it's going to work, right? Very, very weird. And you'll have a table of uninvited people sitting outside, according to Wendy. Now, that's funny. I mean, imagine you have your reception, but then you have a separate, like, you know, you used to have a kid's table sometimes at a wedding, and you put the kids near the bathroom or wherever so they could make a noise, or, you know, you often see that. I wonder if you shouldn't have a table in a different room, or even at a different venue, you know, at a completely different venue, and then you can video stream to those people, but they're the uninvited ones. I mean, that could be hilarious.
Well, you know what you could do if you really wanted to stir the pot?
Yeah.
If you knew that that Pearl was going to be uninvited, Pearl could always ask one of the other guests if she could perhaps be there plus one.
Yeah, but you see, this is where it gets complicated, because now you've told John you're going to uninvite Pearl because he wanted a minus one. And then someone else invites her as their plus one. And suddenly John pitches up. He's like, but I uninvited you. The hell are you doing here? It's going to get very messy. So I don't know. I think this could be hilarious. I've got, as I'm sure everybody does, you've got to make some decisions through the course of the year as to which weddings you go to and which ones you don't, because you can't go to all of them. And sometimes some of them are out of town, and sometimes two of them are on the same day, right? You have to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. This is tough. People, we can joke about it. We can throw this around and laugh about it and talk about how we would respond. The reality is it's actually damn difficult to sometimes make these decisions.
Yeah. Jamie, and they can bring lasting conflict too.
Yeah. Please. The kinds of foribles that you end up, if someone remembers that at the wedding that you said this or whatever, you can multiply whatever it was by 10. Because if it was just a normal, like a family get together on a Sunday and you said something, well, that's bad. But if you said it at the wedding, then forevermore, it's going to be that terrible thing that you said at the wedding. Jamie says, I think the only way that that works is if you decide to have multiple weddings of your wedding and aggregate the groups of minus ones. like I said, the idea sounds exciting, but I don't know how it's going to work. Congo Chris says all the minus ones have to have a fight club, and the winner is allowed to attend. I'll tell you what, this is very messy. Quentin says there must be a hierarchy list. So you put the people you really care about at the top of the list and the ones you kind of have to invite at the end of the list. And then they are cancelable at the end. It's so messy. Tell you what, I'm really glad. I said last week when I watched Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, I'm really glad that I'm single. And I'm very glad that I've had relationships where I didn't really hate the person after we'd broken up. But I also, when I hear stories about weddings and things, I think, the politics involved there, it can get so difficult and so complicated and so messy. You end up making enemies as much as you end up making friends.
It's a lot of pressure.
Jesus. Ew. Incredible. So Dude69 says, I would also uninvite a person if the name is Pearl. What an old name. Yes, exactly. And what is your problem with Pearl, Leanne? I mean, what did she ever do to you? Right?
Well, we do tend to associate wedding guests with these really old relatives that you have to invite. So Pearl's a likely subject.
Yeah. I suppose you've got to invite the old relatives because you don't know how long they're going to be around for. May as well give them one last thing to smile at, right? Weddings already have a hierarchy. Tracy says weddings do have a hierarchy. Well, I suppose they do. You know, it's the bride and the bridal party and the groom's party, and then everyone else kind of comes after that. So there is sort of a hierarchy. And, you know, whoever sits at the bride's table, those are the people that they love the most. So now I'm really causing trouble because a lot of people go, I'm really good friends with her, but... Yeah, she put me at a table very far away from her, so obviously she doesn't care about me as much as I care about her. That happens. Anyway,
yeah.
So the idea of a minus one is quite fun. I wonder if we could extend that not just to weddings, but to any kind of party. Imagine you go to a birthday, for example, and there are two people there. In fact, I brought this up with a party I did last year for my Christmas party, and there were people who... I knew they wouldn't necessarily get along so well, even though I get along with them individually very, very well. Maybe that's the system I should put into place with my party. Yeah. Maybe we should all do these things. You just say to people, all right, you get the option of a plus one, but then you don't get to, you don't get to complain about who else is there. If you want to come on your own, that's fine, but you've made your choice. And if you do want the minus one, then you just have to manage without a partner yourself that day or that night.
Yeah, you can be miserable and grumpy and alone.
Mm. Ulrich says, my uncle and aunt attended a wedding with three halls at the same venue for the reception, one for family, one for friends, and one for her friends. Oh, wow, one for his friends and one for her friends. The couple then moved from hall to hall. Jeez, first of all, that sounds very complicated, but I do see a point, I suppose. Where did the couple spend most of the time? Do they spend it with the family in the middle hall? They go to her friends and his friends. If they don't spend equal time with her friends and his friends, is that rude? Whew.
Have you got different speeches for each hall?
Yeah. Or do they all watch on video? This is very weird. Who has to pay for the bridal party outfits? I went to a wedding last year and the bridesmaids had to pay for their dresses, shoes, and makeup. I think that's unacceptable. Yeah, I think that if you know, especially if you're going to make them dress up in a certain thing, then you've got to pay for that as the bride, right?
Yeah.
Well, it all comes under that big wedding bill. There's a big bill that everything gets collected under. And then that's the one that used to be the bride's family who paid for that, right? In the old days.
Yeah, and the groom's family usually pays for the alcohol.
Right, that's how it used to work. If you don't have money for these things, don't have a big wedding. Lessen the costs. That's quite right, Snae. That's interesting. I think that's the case for everybody. Go on your own. Wedding's the best pickup spots. You see, that's my game usually. Michelle's hit the nail on the head here. That's why I like to go on my own to these things. And I don't mind sitting. Whoever I end up sitting next to, I mean, the last wedding I was at was in, I think it was November last year. And I ended up sitting like right between these two beautiful girls who were both single. It's like, yes.
You had a wedding in Mexico, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, 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 yes. I didn't go to that one on my own because technically I went with Rena, my business partner. But I suppose we were all, I mean, everybody there was, you know, kind of sitting at round tables. I actually ended up with nice people at that reception too. So I like going on my own to these things. I don't have a problem pitching up on my own. I think it's great. Some people don't like it. Jared says, I'm so glad my wife wanted to have a wedding at the magistrate. We got married, went to take photos, and then partied with friends at a bar. No mess, no fuss. Well, I heard a story. Mm-hmm. Just last week, I heard a story. This guy quietly went and got married without anybody, even his own children from a previous marriage, knowing. He just started wearing the ring, and if people asked, he said, yeah, I got married. No fuss, no ceremony, no nothing. They just quietly went and did it. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, it's admirable. I mean, I was thinking about it recently. You kind of get at a certain age when everyone starts getting engaged and talking about marriage and moving in and buying homes, you get swept up in this thing and you think you have to have a wedding, you know? So I suppose when you're older, you've got a choice. And if you've done it before, maybe you don't want to do it again and have this whole public thing. I think it's quite admirable.
Yeah, well, especially if it's a second marriage or whatever, you don't want to make a huge big fuss and have another big wedding, right? You should have got that out of your system the first time. I love this. Tracy says there's a popular wedding venue in the Cape Winelands that charges a venue fee of 8 million rand.
Sure.
Jeez, that's hectic. And Cunning Stunt says, I've been a bridesmaid 13 times and a maid of honor 5 times. It is no joke. Yeah, did you have
it's
to pay?
A lot of work.
So I want to know, did you have to pay for your outfits and all of that stuff every time, or did it go half and half? You know, did the bride say, I'll pick up the tab here? That's interesting. And Cabello says, not in black families. We pay for everything. You'll be lucky if other family members pop something from their pocket. Yeah, that's another thing. I think a lot of young people these days, you can't really ask your parents for money because they might not have any. So you have to pay for everything yourself. And the idea, this very old traditional idea of, who pays for it? You know, the bride's family pays for the actual wedding, and then the groom's family, as Leanne said, pays for the alcohol at the reception. I don't think that really counts anymore. And I think also these days, you know, if the one family's got lots of money and the other one doesn't, then the family who has the lots of money usually pays for things. It's pretty wild. My mum did that, says Snae. She went to get married in Nigeria. We found out after she sent wedding pics to my sister. Yeah, yeah. We were mad. She finishes off. We were mad. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you want to make a fuss. Sometimes you don't. And I reckon there is something quite, I think quite cool about people and admirable about people who just go and get married quietly and don't make a big fuss because it's really about them. You know, they're the couple who are now married. They don't want to make a fuss and cause a whole lot of noise, and also probably avoid the expense and, you know, the politics that we were just talking about. But there's another part of me that says that actually that's also a little bit weird to kind of just go and do it quietly when no one's paying attention and just carry on with your life as usual. Because really these things are worth making a fuss over. So I'm half and half on this.
Yeah, I mean, the wedding's not only for you and your partner.
Yeah.
It's also for your parents to celebrate and your grandparents to be proud and your friends to have a jol and for your friends to meet their, you know, the other's friends.
Mm. Well, I suppose, you know, anything you can just do in front of a magistrate and get done. I always hear these stories about these tiny little weddings where people go to Vegas, for example, and, they hook up there and they get like an Elvis priest to bless their union. and then it's done and there's no fuss there. Kind of, I do like that. I do see why that would be attractive to people. Just by the way, our latest edition of Leadership Books Unpacked comes to you this week. Manda Tsifularo and Rulani Boloi discuss what it means to succeed in the infinite game of business. And they unpack something called Just Cause, one of five essential practices that leaders should follow to adopt an infinite mindset by considering that the cause should be for something. It should be inclusive. It should be service-oriented. It should be resilient and idealistic. And the conversation is anchored on the book called The Infinite Game, which is by Simon Sinek. And that's a guy who I often come across on social media saying very, very smart and quite breakthrough things, Simon Sinek. So if you want to hear more about that, don't go and read the whole book. Who has time? Rather, listen to Leadership Books Unpacked. Wherever you get your podcasts, it's brought to you by Superlead. But you can also find it on cliffcentral.com and everywhere else too. So that's Leadership Books Unpacked. Take a listen to that and you can find out the condensed, pricey version of what Simon Sinek says in his book called The Infinite Game. Have you picked up any good books lately?
No, not really.
Gee, the way you took that deep breath before, I was like, oh no. The COVID's got to her brain as well. She has to think about whether or not she has read an interesting book.
Yeah, no, I'm more into watching things, watching documentaries, watching reality shows. That's more my vibe. I've been binge watching Silicon Valley.
Oh yeah,
which is now available as a box set, which is why I'm able to watch all six seasons. But yeah, so at the moment I'm just thinking about how tech works, how up and down it is, what a farce it is. So that's been my thing at the moment. And then obviously with a good dose of comedy.
Well, at least you've got your series to keep you entertained. I'm not going to force people to read. A lot of people, I mentioned this the other day, you listen to an audiobook rather than read it, but you feel like you're cheating. And a lot of us are embarrassed to admit that we'd rather listen to the audiobook than read. But I have been reading. I'm reading a really interesting book, obviously a history book, but I'll tell you about that in a second. But I interviewed a guy the other day called Pete Pacifique. He's from Rwanda, and he's written a great book called Witnessing, which I actually interviewed him about the other day, and you can go and find that this week on cliffcentral.com. He is basically someone who lived through the Rwandan genocide. He lived through the war in Rwanda. He has an incredible story, which is... I mean, it's riveting. It's also very, very difficult to hear in some parts. But I spoke to him just the other day, and he has some incredible insights, not only into what happened in Rwanda and how he then had to come to South Africa as a refugee. He worked as a car guard for a while. He did pretty much anything it took to stay alive and to survive, and ended up getting a university degree, ended up starting his own business. And he's now written this book. So if you want an inspiring story, take a listen to that. It'll be coming out this week. That's a guy called Pete Pacifique. That's his name. And he is an author. He's also a businessman and somebody who's just put this book, Witnessing, together, where he tells the story of what he went through in Rwanda. If you want to read that, that's a good book. And the book that I'm reading, the history book, is about the Plantagenets, the English royal dynasty that ruled from about 1120 to 1399. So
it's very niched, hey?
Very niched, hey, Leanne. Very. And I know exactly those dates because they, in the history, in the history of the, of Europe, the 1120 date comes from the sinking of the White Ship, which was a major, major event in Norman and Anglo-Norman.
Not the end of apartheid.
I think that's a bit further down the line. And then 1399, I think, is the death of Richard II. So that was properly the end, because after that came the Wars of the Roses. But a really interesting book. It was actually given to me on Thursday by Anthony Meaderer, who, you know, does blind history with me. So I've got these two books that I'm reading, and then there's plenty more too. So I am trying to stay up to date with the books too. I've got a pile of them that I still have to make my way through. Dr. Robin says, my nephew and nieces are of the marrying age, and they love threatening to be the Robin loves threatening to be the dranty, or the drunk version of, or the girl version of the
girl
drunkle
version of the drunkle
at their weddings. Yeah, that's good. Apparently, here's some good books. Cunning Stunt says Bad Blood, the Elizabeth Holmes story, which is also on Netflix. And that any other book suggestions you have, always welcome. Just like series suggestions. Somebody told me about a series over the weekend, which I'm going to start watching, which is called Moon Knight. It's about this guy who has this personality disorder, and he figures out that these ancient Egyptian spirits have like taken over his body. So I'm going to give that a try. And
oh, my word.
Yeah, it sounds hectic, but I'm going to give it a go. What the hell, right? That's how we learn. Coming up, we got Collectomania, which is our chance to catch up with people who have collected interesting things over the last while. People who are, you know, major collectors, minor collectors, people who just do it for fun. They might not even take it too seriously. I mean, we've spoken to some collectors who take it very, very seriously. So we'll get into that in a while. Leanne is also a collector, so she's shared her collections with us over the last while. But that, of course, is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. I'm going to speak to Josh, who's a listener of ours. He's going to tell us about his collection, and that's coming up in just a moment or two. So before we get to that, Leanne Moll, you had a I think this is interesting, the most expensive burger in Cape Town. And I don't even know whether I've tried the most expensive burger in Cape Town. I probably would know just from the bill, but what is the most expensive burger? And where do you get it?
So the most expensive currently is being listed as a burger from a place called Burger and Lobster, mm-hmm. which is in this unassuming building on Bree Street.
Okay.
Being talked about a lot. And it costs, let's see, 235 Rand.
Okay. All right. So it's not like ridiculous. I was expecting I was expecting some outlandish, like crazy thing that people are just, where it's almost like a gag gift where people are like, oh, I just had the most expensive burger and I paid 1,000 Rand for it. It's nothing like that.
No, it's not like it's covered in gold leaf caviar and, you know, rare truffles or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's the lobster, which makes it really expensive.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's more like a lobster roll, but that can be classified as a burger, which is meat between two buns of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
And this is lobster in between brioche bread, which is just so delicious and soft mm-hmm. and lovely. So yeah, it's basically a lobster tail drenched in Japanese mayonnaise,
mm-hmm.
And then into a New England brioche roll. And then it comes with a cheese sauce as well. And obviously your chips, but apparently it is well worth the money. It's
all right.
It's, hyped up, but really well worth the money. And apparently going to the place as well as an experience in its own.
Well, I think that's worth a try next time I'm in Cape Town. It doesn't sound like it's outrageously expensive, but that's the most expensive burger in the country. And I remember once we went on a family holiday when we were kids, and my parents took us on a ship, and then we ended up in Mauritius, I think. And we went to this very, very expensive resort where the hamburgers were outrageously expensive just because of the conversion. And because we weren't guests at the resort, we were just day visitors. So we had to pay these exorbitant. I mean, I just remember my dad and our family friend, the two of them looking at each other going, when they got the bill, I thought that probably is the most expensive burger I've ever had. Mm. My favorite burger in the whole world, and I don't like talking about food on the show because then all I do is I just want to finish the show and eat. But the most, my favorite burger comes from a place called Shake Shack. Have you ever heard of Shake Shack in America?
Oh, yes.
They make an amazing burger.
But I've never had it.
Oh, they make the best burgers, and they've got Shake Shacks all over the place. The last time I had one was in Austin in Texas. But they also have one in the terminal building at JFK. So when you fly out of New York, that is a hell of a thing to have. That's probably the nicest burger that I've ever had. So whatever that costs, that's probably my top range. All right. So this
I met
is all-
someone a while back who had never, ever had a Steers burger.
Oh, yeah?
And I was completely blown away. So I specifically went, took them to Steers. And you know, sometimes you just don't get a great order for some reason.
Uh-oh.
It just doesn't live up to it. And so I looked the fool when they said, you know, this isn't that great.
Oh, boy. Because you'd been, what, telling them how great it was?
I was like, yeah, it's a good burger.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. Great.
Carl wants to know, how can that be the most expensive burger? Surely there's a Wagyu beef burger somewhere for more. That can't be legit. Maybe.
Yeah, well, look, the article claims to say one of the most expensive burgers.
Oh.
So, yeah. I mean, surely you could.
Don't misrepresent this stuff, Leanne. This is important. Some of us are actually making lists in our head.
Well, I mean, that maybe they didn't do all the research, you know?
Nico says a burger needs to be messy, so messy that you need a shower afterwards. I don't agree. Hey, I don't agree at all. Too much sauce. It's not good. Sauce on side better. All right, let's move on. It's time for Collectomania. Let's welcome Josh. Josh has been listening to us for a while. He's been a fan pretty much from day one. Is that right, Josh? You have?
Yes.
Nice to see you, man. How are you doing?
Good.
So, Josh, where in the world are you at the moment? Where do you live?
In Cape Town.
Okay, I thought you were overseas, but you're in Cape Town. All right,
I was in Israel, and then I studying, and then I came back.
Okay, so you're in Cape Town now, but for some reason, I don't know if I confused you with someone else. I thought you were in Canada or something. So let's just talk about this, because you're not a serious collector, but you've got a collection of shot glasses, right, from all over the world, because I know people collect spoons. We have people who they collect fridge magnets with like Copenhagen or Toronto or whatever written on them. So you started this collection because you thought, well, I've gone to a couple of these places and I'm gonna get shot glasses with the places' names written on them.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I saw someone who had fridge magnets.
Yeah.
With different places to remember where they had been with. All around the world. So mm-hmm. I thought a good idea to remember where I had been would be to just collect shot glasses. It's a small thing to like just remember the cities I've been to.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, let's look at some of these. By the way, how many do you have?
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 12.
Okay, so it's not, again, not a serious collection. You're not like collecting... like some of these people we've had who've got a whole room full of this stuff. But this is, I mean, it's cool because, again, this illustrates to people who maybe are taking this a lot more seriously. You don't have to be a hardcore collector, right, Leanne?
Mm. No, exactly. You can, and also it's something that you can build up. I mean, if it's, you can't go to all these places at once. You need time and age on your side and money to build up these collections if you're collecting them from places you visited.
So where have you been? Tell us about these places.
So I started off by seeing some in Israel, seeing somebody had shot glasses from here in South Africa. So I started with getting South African, just general South African flag shot glasses.
Okay.
Then I got invited to a conference in Germany in Hanover.
Okay.
And I took a flight by Amsterdam. So I spent day in Amsterdam. So I first went through Amsterdam.
Okay.
And got this one.
All right.
So in Germany, there was a Bayern Munich football match that my friend wanted to see.
Yep.
So we decided to go to the match before going to Hanover to the conference. So we spent a few days in Munich. So
you got a Munich one as well.
Yeah, so I got a Munich one, and then I found it was hard to find one in Hanover, but I found this.
Let me ask you something. There. When you collect shot glasses, you have to bring them back in your bag, and glass, we know, breaks easily. I mean, this is not the easiest thing to collect. You know, some people collect stuff that maybe is a little more wear and tear oriented. Have you broken any during your travels? Did you come back from wherever you've been and then you discovered in your luggage that the thing is smashed and you obviously can't add it to the collection then?
So thank God I haven't done that. I've actually moved a few times around, like moving from my parents' house to where my wife and I are living now after I got married recently. And
yeah.
Even with the moves, I haven't broken any of them.
Well, thank God for that. As you say, thank God. So, all right, listen, this is a very cool little collection. And I know that you're not a serious collector, but this is part of the reason we want to show people that these collections can be a much more relaxed thing. They don't have to be something that drives you absolutely crazy like some of our compulsive collectors. And it's good of you to share them with us this morning, Josh. Very, very nice.
Also, shot glasses are a little bit more cool than thimbles, like our grands might have collected.
Yeah, exactly.
But more or less the same size.
And do you, when you have people around to your house and you pour drinks for them, do you let them use your shot glasses or do you just buy cheap plastic ones for those?
Sometimes I let them use them. Most of the time I use cheap plastic ones.
Yeah, because you know, nothing worse than people who drink shots who usually end up drunk and then breaking your special collection up. You know, you've got 12, you want to get to 13, 14, 15. You don't want to go back to number 10. I love it.
Exactly.
All right, Josh. Nice to see you, dude.
Gareth.
Yes.
I was just listening to you speaking about the burgers and reminded me of two quick stories. One that I think kosher burgers in Cape Town are much more expensive sometimes.
I'm sure they are.
And you're speaking about Shake Shack, and one of the places I went to was Chicago.
Yeah.
My brothers were living there. It's a beautiful city.
Right.
And when I was in Chicago, I went to Shake Shack and I wasn't feeling well, and actually in Shake Shack there was a whole medical scene where I fainted. That's the only ever time I've been to Shake Shack.
So not great memories for you. Not great memories for you then in Shake Shack. Well, I'll tell you what, I always have a good burger there. So I thought I thought I'd mention it, but now I feel kind of bad. It's traumatizing you from the time you caused the medical scene. All right, nice to see you, Josh. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Gareth.
All right, dude.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Wow. Tiny little collection, but a good one. And if you're going to collect anything, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking. I mean, you could pretty much take the first half hour of this morning, and that could be a kind of collectomania, right? Because we were talking about the currency and how South Africa's currency is 100 years old. What did you think we were talking about? Johnny Depp and Amber Heard? You think that's a collection?
I actually was.
You think you'd be collecting fecal matter from Amber Heard as part of a collection? I don't think so. Yeah.
It's the first thing I went to.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Collectomania is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And if you want to find out more about what they do, and they've got amazing stuff there. They really have. If you want to go and see their new offices, they're in what's that place called now? The Mark, which is
Mark.
Correct. In Rivonia Road in Sandton. You can go and see the Mark, and they've got a brand new office there, which is very, very cool. You can go and see if you want to invest. And we were talking earlier about where people are putting their money now, with the stock market not looking so great and crypto not looking so great. Well, one place they are putting their money is in gold. And if you want to know how to start investing in gold, the best thing you can do is to go along to the South African Gold Coin Exchange or the Scoin Shop and see for yourself. Go to scoinshop.com. That's S-C-O-I-N shop.com. And you can find out about all of their stuff. And if you're a collector of interesting or unusual things, just like Josh, or if you know of such a person, then tell us. Because we've spoken to very serious collectors who've got incredible collections worth lots and lots of money. And we've spoken to people who have just, you know, a couple of things that they like having around. And let us hear about that. All you have to do is send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com.
I'm really disturbed by what Congo Chris is saying.
What does he say?
And I'm really hoping it's not true.
A poo museum in the UK. Well, just the other day...
I really hope not.
No, this is a thing. So we had a discussion with Bakabantu and Lebang the other day about the Penis Museum in Iceland, which a lot of people have gone to. And there probably is a poo museum in the UK. I wouldn't put it past them. I'm fairly sure that they, you know, especially in the UK, they're the kind of people who would have a poo museum. Snai says, I collect snow glasses from the countries I've been to. So that what are those, like those snow globes? Is that what you're talking about, Snai? That's a pretty cool one. If you go to Checkers in Sea Point, Cape Town, they have a kosher fish burger ready to take away in the pensioners section. They're cheap and awesome. All right. I like this. I like that people have come up with their own suggestions of the best burgers because now I've got a bunch of places on my other list that I have to go to. Someone told me about a place the other day, which I must just see where I wrote it down. Some kind of place where you... Apparently, you get the best steak in the country. That's a whole other discussion, which we'll have. What happened to you, Leanne? You disappeared for a second there.
I actually had a coughing fit, so
Jesus.
I had to go off the audio and the visual, you know?
This is what you are pretty sure is COVID, right? Oh, look at it.
I'm thinking.
That's great.
It's more like a tickle than a full-blown... thing, but yeah.
All right. I still would have liked to have heard it. Then we can all enjoy your,
no.
We could all enjoy your COVID with you. Oh no, come on. Don't be selfish.
Still going on.
Share it with the rest of us. All right. Apparently, because he's been around for such a long time and his contribution to ecology and to documenting the earth and all of us, all of these incredible animal and plant species on the earth, according to that, David Attenborough has had lots and lots of animals and plants named after him. And it's only right because he's pretty much a hero of the animal and the plant kingdom. And he's the human who, if animals and plants had a say, I'm sure they'd vote for him to have things named after him more than almost any other person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So he's got everything from a prehistoric marine reptile named after him to a native British flower, which is only found in the Brecon Beacons of South Wales.
Okay.
But all of them, you know, come with their kind of scientific name. Oh, sorry.
Jesus, what happened? What did you just stand on your cat?
My own breed of...
Did you just stand on your cat? What the hell happened?
They're fighting under my feet, two of them.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, basically, I could have stood on one. So they are all named with two words. So for instance, let's start with this. Attenborough's black-eyed satyr butterfly.
I'm not even interested in this. I want to know about the cats fighting under your feet. That's way more interesting to me. Sorry. It's very hard to concentrate.
I don't know what to do with them. But anyway, it's also one of the reasons why I had to mute, because there was a whole cat fight going on.
All right.
So he's got the Eupetia Attenbury.
Jesus.
And then all of them are named the whatever Attenbury.
Okay.
So he's got butterflies, these geckos. He's got dragonfly species. So I thought that he had to be directly involved in discovering them, but obviously he's not. He can't be. But no, you can just name them in honor of whoever you like. For instance, there was this dragonfly that was in honor of his 90th birthday in 2016. And then, interestingly enough, and the article kind of sweeps over this part, and I wish it had gone into it more, but you can sometimes, the scientists who find them name any of their childhood heroes in the naming of these creatures. So there's even a millipede named after Taylor Swift. I'm like, what? There's the millipede Nanaria Swifty, named after Taylor Swift in 2022.
All right.
There is the one scientist or taxonomist, actually. He quite liked Star Wars, so he named this weevil that he found Trigonopterus Ewok.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Suppose you get the right to choose the name for something if you've discovered it as well. And some of these people spend their life, you know, discovering some huge family of insects that the rest of us don't even know exists. And with every specimen that they manage to get, or every species that they define, they can then get the chance to name it. So you'll eventually have to come up with very creative names.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I like it. I just also like the idea that it's David Attenborough, because, you know, of how much everybody loves him. He's widely regarded as one of the coolest people in the world. There's a beetle named after him in the Siberian tundra, says Congo Chris, which is pretty cool too. All right, nice. There are lots of people still talking about the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp situation. I don't know why everybody loves that so much. And my favorite thing about the show this morning is Leanne and the cat fight. I don't really care about anything else. I really don't. It's the most interesting thing to me.
There's you know, like the dog whisperer type dudes, like the Cesars of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There is a cat whisperer as well. His name evades me right now. But I kind of, many times I've wished that I could just have him come and live with me for a week to assess. But the personalities of all of the animals.
I don't think you need a pet psychologist. You need a human psychologist to come and live with you for a week. All right. So to answer Carl's question, Gareth, when are you going to replace your dog, Carl? It's always been a good example of how kids are not the same as pets. I've actually spoken to the breeder, and I'm looking at getting another dog soon. So that'll be fun. There wasn't a moment where I thought I don't want another pet. You know, I'm not the kind of person who, I don't get lonely. So I'm not miserable and all alone and sad, but I do like the idea of having some creature in the house that you can keep company with.
Yeah, absolutely.
With. And
it makes it a home, I think.
Yeah.
But now I'd be interested to know, and it can be a sensitive question and a personal one, so you don't need to answer it. But would you go for the same breed after mm-hmm. kind of a breed-related death?
Well, I mean, Carl had 11 really good years of perfect health. So yes, I don't have a problem with that. 11 years is a long time for one of those little dogs. And I don't think there's no breed of dog I'd rather have now. I mean, he's just, you know, any of those Cavalier King Charles Spaniels are just the most awesome little dogs. And I told you I got my parents one in December, because
they are so lovely.
Oh,
so there are two breeds that have been banned now in, I think it's in Norway.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
And yeah, the King Cavalier is one of them. And the other one is the English Bulldog, due to the problems that come with the breed.
It's funny, like my brother has English Bulldogs and I have these Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. And I mean, it's like we're asking for this. And I know a lot of people also said, why don't you just adopt? And I mean, you know, a lot of the dogs that we've had and that I've had in my life have been mutts from the SPCA, and I love them. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're all great. Their health is usually way better than any of these highly bred pedigreed dogs. But I feel like I really want this one special dog, because I had that kind of relationship with Carl. And who knows? It may be a bad decision in the long run. You never know. It's like those parents who, after they've had one kid, they're like, oh, I think we should have another one. And they're like, oh, this one's a fucking disaster. The previous one was much better.
Why did we do that?
The difference is, the difference is that I'm not having a human child here. So, you know, it's a
pet.
That's
the most important part. It's the most responsible thing you can do.
No.
And thank you as well to Audrey Hartz, who has reminded us it's Jackson Galaxy who I'm thinking of. He's the cat whisperer.
Oh, okay.
He's like this bald, tattooy, piercing type guy. Very cool. And he just knows cats so well. he's fascinating to watch.
Okay.
Look him up on YouTube.
We may have to go into a whole other game, because you remember we took suggestions for Carl's name from the audience. I think we had something close to like 10,000 people vote in a poll to name Carl, and then I ignored the results anyway and went ahead and chose my own name. But I mean, this time it might be interesting to have some names. You know, we often have discussions on the show about the worst names that people give to people, you know, people who name their children terrible things. So maybe we can come up with a really cool name. And I'd like to hear about that. You know, maybe someone's got some ideas.
Are you thinking of getting specifically a boy or a girl?
No, I don't mind. I mean,
or a hermaphrodite?
Yeah, you're always at the top of the list to have a hermaphrodite, but no, I'm not really too worried about whether it's male or female. It depends on what's available at the time. I also don't really mind what, you know, because you get different sort of colors of breed. So I'm not too fussed about that either. It's just really to have something around the house that you have to be responsible for, that you develop a relationship with, that keeps you company, that you keep company. And it's just a fun thing. I don't like to live in a house without any other living things in it besides plants. As much as I don't like a house that's full of living things either. That would be exactly the opposite of what I'm going for here. But I mean, I had a couple of really, really good years of companionship with that dog. And I think I want to have the same with a new dog. So to answer that question in the longest way possible, Carl, yes, there's another one coming. So I'd like to, I'll let you know, obviously, as things progress, but that's something. I see a lot of people also suggesting get a cat or get a girl. Robin says get a girl. Yeah, I'll just get any random girl off the street. I'll do? I'll go to the shop this afternoon, and while I'm shopping for baked beans and soup ingredients, I might just pick a girl out of the shop and say,
no,
hey,
man,
what are you doing? Why don't you come home?
Dog.
No, she's talking about a human girl, I'm sure. But I'll come home with a random girl from the shops, and I'll just keep her for 11 years. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. But yeah. We'll need to see a picture of the doggy, and then we can have a vote.
Yeah.
Also don't, you know, sometimes you only know once you've got the dog what you want to name him or her.
Mm.
But they'll obviously, being a highly bred animal, they'll have their thoroughbred name as well.
Oh, yeah, but I don't go with, I mean, who wants to go with that? Yeah.
Yeah, they're usually quite strange.
Yeah, they usually are, because they come from a specific kennel or from a specific house or from a specific breeding line, or, you know, I don't think that that's necessarily a good common name to throw around at the animal. Anyway, We'll get to the end of this discussion eventually, but there are a lot of people talking about this. Get a chinchilla, says Guiman Beatus. I like your name. That's a great name for a dog. I'm not sure. Call the dog Chewbacca. This is Corona's boring. My dog's name is Chewbacca. He's a Wookiee, and that does two things. Okay, I suppose so. Boston Terriers, people saying, and collies are for me. I live in a plot, so collies get lots of exercise. This is interesting.
They have to, otherwise, they go nuts.
Get a 56-year-old divorcee, Gareth. The mileage might be high, but at least the ride is comfortable. Apparently, the place to go for that now is Katie's Palace in Joburg on a Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where you find your divorcees. You find those
cougars.
You find the bitter old cougars Katie's Palace. So I'll keep an eye. You know what? Maybe I'll do that. I just never like to go out on a Sunday, but if I force myself, it might be worth it. Yeah. All right.
There was one town that you used to go to.
Oh, no, Maritzburg. Yeah, Maritzburg's full of bitter old divorcees and cougars. Yeah, plenty. Lots. Swiss shepherd dog, says Richard. No. Stop with your suggestions. You get your dog, I'll get mine, all right? Don't tell me what to get here.
It's a very personal thing.
Yeah, for heaven's sake, it's going to live in my house with me. I'm not going to get one of whatever dog Richard wants me to get.
Well, you know, I used to. I have to understand as well that I'm the type of person who goes in, I bust into the shelter and go, which dog's going to be put down next? Because I'll take that one.
Yeah, I know. And don't send me those videos of like these dogs that get adopted from shelters because they oh, it's so emotional and horrible. And you make me feel bad. Yeah. But, and I know, I mean, I do, I do little charity runs to the local SPCA myself. I take them blankets. I collect things for them when I can. I donate money to them, but I don't want to necessarily pick up, you know, someone else's doggy. Now, my parents have got a very sweet little dog called Lucy, who's, she's an adopted Jack Russell. And she's the most grateful. She's the most grateful little dog ever. Every time you see her, she's like, oh, I'm so happy to be here. Just please believe me. I'm so happy to be here. And I get that. But I'm not looking for that.
It's a thing. It happens. My parents have also a little rescue Jack Russell named Hutch. And he was in a terrible position where he was in a pen with a whole lot of other Jack Russell type dogs.
Yeah.
And now when you drive up the driveway, he's just...
He's so thrilled.
He pees himself. He's so excited just to see anyone.
Yeah, because he was in jail, basically.
Yeah.
So we often say to Lucy, the Jack Russell, we're like, oh, Lucy, is it great not to be in jail anymore? And she goes, you know, she starts blinking her eyes and her tail goes like this. And anyway, I'm not in the market for that. That's not what I asked for. My folks have a rescue Russell called Susan, says Robin. Yeah, Susan's a good name for a dog. I love
proper human names for dogs.
Yes, me too.
I think
it's like you take them a little more seriously if they have a proper name. I had before Carl, I had Hecate, who was a Jack Russell.
Yes.
She was a fat Jack Russell, and she was also, she had a serious name, Hecate, which comes from Macbeth's, I think it was from one of Macbeth's plays, or Hecate was the queen of the witches in ancient Greece or something like that. So I've got to come up with a serious name for the next one as well. It can't be some bullshit name. But let me know if you have suggestions.
Tracy says we're getting a new pug puppy next week. Mm-hmm. His name is Doug.
Oh, nice.
So now we have Steve and Doug. And interestingly, the collective noun for pugs are a grumble.
A grumble of pugs. That's also because they pugs make a huge noise. And they also drag their asses, don't they? Or is that only if they have worms? I'm not sure.
No, it's often it's because they eat grass and then the grass comes out whole at the other end. I've pulled one out from the back of the Boston Terrier once.
Thank you. That's enough. Thank you very much.
At a braai, and I didn't expect it to be that long.
It was a friend of mine's birthday over the weekend, and he was wearing a shirt with French bulldogs on them. He's got a French bulldog, and he had a shirt made with like his own dog's face on it, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
All right. Very, very good. That's all we got time for this morning, everybody, but I hope you have enjoyed this morning, and I hope your Monday is off to an awesome start. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Be good. And check in with us at 6 a.m. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cliffcentral.com.